a moment. Gardens and fountains in Palestine were surrounded by, or I should not say fountains, I should just simply say gardens and vineyards in Palestine were surrounded by rock walls to prevent the intrusion of strangers. Only the lawful possessor of the garden could enter it. Recently we had a board staff retreat down at San Luis Rey Mission in about an hour and a half drive away from here, and one of the neat things about that mission was that they have a private garden that is enclosed and walled. And we found a way to sneak into the garden and just enjoy walking around in it. And he is commenting about his bride-to-be being a garden with a wall around it. That is, she is a private person. Theirs is an exclusive relationship. And not only is she a garden walled, but she is a spring sealed. In the biblical world, of course, water was scarce. The owners of fountains frequently sealed them with a clay which quickly hardened in the sun. And that was a mark of ownership, and that clay seal was not to be broken by anyone else. That sealed fountain was designed to give water only to its rightful owner. Therefore, to him, to the shepherd, she is a person who is reserved exclusively for him. She has not been possessed by anyone else, nor is she to be regarded as anyone else's possession. She, for the shepherd, is a garden paradise. And he notes that your plants, or the King James has shoots, or the idea is the expressions radiating out of your personality, are an orchard of pomegranates with choice fruits, with henna and nard, nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with every kind of incense tree, with myrrh and aloes, and all the finest spices. Now, we won't comment on the significance of each of those terms, except to note that the shepherd regards his Shunammite girl as a garden paradise of delightful fruits, fragrant flowers, colorful blossoms, towering trees, and aromatic spices. Every branch of her personality is scintillating, flavorful, enchanting, aromatic. Not only that, she is not only an Eden, a garden of Eden to him, but she is cool, fresh water to him. You are a garden fountain, a well of flowing water streaming down from Lebanon, which would of course be cool because it's coming down from the mountains. And so he mixes his metaphors, having called her first a garden and then a fountain. He finally says, you're a fountain within the garden. That's what you are to me. The Shulamite then responds to this invitation of love. And again, we're maybe dealing with a dream sequence. And she says to her shepherd boyfriend, "Awake, north wind, and come, south wind. Blow on my garden that its fragrance may spread abroad. Let my lover come into his garden and taste its choice fruits." She is at this point uncertain as to where her shepherd friend is. So she calls for the winds to blow and spread her fragrance to wherever he is, so that he might know where to find her. "Come, north wind." If he's to the south, the north wind would waft the aroma of her presence to him there. If he is in the north, the south wind would waft the aroma of her presence there. It's poetic metaphor. "Blow on my garden that its fragrance may spread abroad. Let my lover come into his garden and taste its choice fruits." And she is not reticent at all about describing the delight that she looks forward to on their wedding night, when fully their personalities will come together and they will celebrate the joy that God has placed in a marriage relationship. We then see the lover responding, and it is as though the girl sees in this moment her wedding as already having come. He responds to her, "I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk." He then describes their wedded love as a beautiful garden he has enjoyed and as a great feast he has celebrated. And at that moment, a voice enters the scene. "Eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers." And question arises interpretively as to who speaks this. Where does this voice come from? I personally would hold to the somewhat dramatic view that it is at this point God speaking on their wedding night, saying to them, "Eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers." They have regarded each other with proper chastity and reverence. And now, on their wedding evening, God is saying to them what He said first to Adam and Eve. It is not good that a man or a woman should be alone. I will make a helper for him and for her. God saw all that is made, and including the creation of man and woman as husband and wife, and sees it as very good. And I would see this voice now as God speaking in the situation and putting His stamp of approval upon their relationship, which is what we always seek in Christian marriage, isn't it? We believe that Christian marriage carries with it the approval of God Himself, and that sexuality within marriage is God's idea and not man's at all, and that it is the world that has perverted the whole concept of what God designed for sexual experience and so robbed it of its richness and its meaning that it has become profaned in the world. But God restores it to its rightful place and honors married relationship. Eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers. In a day in which the concepts of fidelity and loyalty and purity are laughed at and scorned, here is God's Word celebrating a couple who has maintained with one another and with Him purity in thought and deed. Well, as the shepherd girl has had this dreamlike sequence of the wedding invitation from her shepherd and the wedding day which has been anticipated and indeed dreamed of as though it had already occurred, we then come to another scene in this second act, and that is a frightening dream. Chapter 5, verse 2 through chapter 6, verse 3. She is once more dreaming as she did in an earlier chapter when we closed last Sunday night session. We noticed her dream in chapter 3, verse 1 through 5. This time her dream is set in the context of after their marriage. She has been reunited with him, a thing that is now physically impossible because she is in Solomon's court. And she dreams, I slept. But my heart was awake. Have you ever had that experience? You slept, but your heart was awake. Listen, my lover is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. My head is drenched with dew, my hair with the dampness of the night. And of course, this would describe him if he indeed is the shepherd. He has been out with his flocks in the evening. The Palestinian dew is settled heavy upon the ground as it does in the springtime or in the fall time or even in the summertime in Palestine. And he has been out with the flock. Now he is asking for entrance to the room. She responds, I have taken off my robe. And must I put it on again? I have washed my feet. Must I soil them again? My lover thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my lover and my hands dripped with myrrh. My fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the lock. I opened for my lover, but my lover had left. He was gone. My heart had gone out to him when he spoke. I looked for him, but did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer me. Here is a classic story that is repeated in so many marriages of a love that once in its romantic days glowed with ardor, but now has come up against a moment of inconvenience. The shepherd, as far as the Shulamite was concerned, came to her now at an inconvenient moment. She had now prepared for bed. She had washed her feet. To walk across the dirt floor again would be an inconvenience. He models a tremendous man characteristic of love in not insisting on his own way, and that when she does not answer to his call, he leaves discreetly.